Hey, thank you for listening to my podcast. Now, if you're looking for help scaling your e-commerce business or advertising campaigns on Facebook and other platforms, then I want to invite you for a free strategy session. We help entrepreneurs scale from six figures to seven figures and even to eight figures with their e-commerce businesses. So if that's what you're looking for, then I want to invite you. There should be a link somewhere here so you can apply for a free strategy call and we'll see how we can help you out. Hello guys, Alex Fedotov here, and today we have the man, the myth, the legend. You know, so many people on YouTube ask me, man, like, hey, can you interview this guy? Can you interview? And like, and I was watching your videos, man. Your videos are like mind-blowing, like so good and so valuable. So Debbie here, Debbie Fogarty, the founder of Udi, big nine-figure brand, and also other brands. Like how many other brands do you have now in your portfolio?
We have about nine other brands, you know, all varying size. Some are small, some are still babies that might not even work, but about nine others.
So I was observing this, like, and I, like last year, remember we had this conversation. I mean, you have grown like so fast, right? So with your business, and like I had a conversation as well with Paul, who was on your team. One of the things he told me about you is that you have like a very like particular, like thinking, you're thinking in big categories, right? Like you're thinking big, right? So what I'm curious, compared to other people, you know, for some people, for example, like six figures, like seven figures, like big amounts, right? Like for you, it's like you're at this level, you're seeing like nine, like, I mean, you're already nine figures, like you're seeing like 10 figures, probably 11 figures. Like, so what is saying like gave you that inception to think this big, you know, at such, I mean, relatively like young age?
It's an interesting question. I'd love to say that I just, you know, it's just my nature, but I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think my nature is to really kind of just logically look at my environment and where I'm currently at, and then kind of be quite realistic about what's possible. So, you know, that means that when I launched my brands initially, I wasn't thinking that they could be $100 million brands. I was just taking it day by day. But since having enough feedback around e-commerce and seeing what people are able to achieve when the product is right and the flywheel is right is really exciting. And that led me to believe that, you know, we can do this at massive horizontal scale. So launching a lot of different product categories, providing that, you know, the CPAs make sense, the product is good, it creates word of mouth referral, like a lot of like requirements that, you know, the Udi has met. So yeah, I believe that we can do that. It's not for everyone to try to build a massive house of brands from scratch. There's a lot of operating expenses and it's a lot of risk as well, but, you know, we're building something. And so far we've, as I was saying to you before, you know, we've got plenty of positive feedback, but also like there's a lot of challenges as well. Like you listen to the other guys that are doing similar things, not the Thrasios, the aggregators, but probably more like the 4x400s. They're, you know, they have a podcast and it sounds like they're having a lot of our challenges as well, but it's good fun. And again, you just get so much feedback and so many learnings. So it is really exciting.
What has been like, so for example, like this year, and like, you know, when people think about like successful people, like, I mean, I think you're like very successful, you know, person. So there's obviously the good side of it, right? There's like all the success and like you have successful business, but there is like, you know, the bad side of it, right? Like what would you say like is the biggest, for example, like this year, can you give me like example of some of the like big challenges, like, you're like literally don't even fucking know like what you're going to do. Like, yeah. Have you had those situations this year?
Yeah, I'd probably frame that to be like, you know, challenges are relative. So I remember when I was, you know, first launching Calming Blankets and I had a border hold. So the customs just was searching my product. It's what happens when you first import product. And I had sold the whole container. And I thought my life was going to end. I've got a photo of I was practically crying like when they got released. And, you know, and then you compare that to losing maybe like $20 million a month from not having proper inventory due to these supply constraints and stuff like that. And it feels the same because, you know, the pain that you feel is relative to your ability to handle it. And I think that that's
Can you repeat that phrase?
Sure. The pain that you feel is relative to how you, like your ability to deal with it, you know, it's subjective. This look at Elon Musk. You think he'd be worried about what I just described? It's kind of, you know, you just got to zoom out and you get better, you get more conditioned at it. So like for the entrepreneurs that are listening to this, that are, you know, just kind of imploding right now because of a small problem, you know, don't look at my problems and then think that, you know, that you're inferior for not being able to deal with it. It's like, you just get better. And it comes from like fixing the problem and then realizing that, you know, it wasn't that big a deal. It wasn't the end of the world. And you're still in the game. So there's a lot of books that kind of just say, the only problem that is an actual problem is the one that just gets you out of the game completely. So never overextend, never get too much leverage debt to the point where, you know, you're out of the game completely and keep fighting.
And like, so when you were like starting out, like now is obviously like bigger challenges. So like when you were like starting out, what were like the, like, have you had those type of challenges that like, I mean, you got to this point. So that's what you said, like, by kind of like leveling up, right? Like you don't get to this level instantly, right? And like the same way as like lottery winners typically lose, you know, all the money they have like within a few months because they simply don't know how to handle it, right? So what were some of the major, like, would you say like breaking points or kind of like tipping points on your, like, on your path that like just kind of like opened your eyes?
Sorry, just broke up a bit. I got the question though. Just let me know if I break up. Look, I think the first one that was just, I like to call them paradigm shifts. And I think the first one was realizing that I knew nothing and I needed to learn everything. And I was like, okay. And then the next paradigm shift was like, okay, how do you learn? And it's like, okay, there's so many self-learning tools out there now. You know, I probably didn't learn how to learn quick enough as well. So what I mean by that is my method of learning e-commerce was like just launch e-commerce stores when I didn't realize that YouTube literally had a tutorial, like step by step how to do it. So, you know, none of the best practices got learned from the outset and I had to learn that the hard way. So, you know, the other ones were around learning your finances and stuff like that, realizing that, making sure that you have complete control of your margin. The other one was probably, I'm only here because I managed to make a lot of connections in the industry really quickly that just put me on the right path. You know, those people that you meet compound really quickly because they introduce you to other people and they also prevent you from another path that is really detrimental, like that you're learning the wrong thing. So, you know, learning, meeting the right people, like going to conferences, you know, reaching out to people like yourself, asking like, who can help me with this? Yeah, just constantly learning. You know, you mentioned Paul before in our call, who used to work with us. He, you know, is the best at this. All you do is you just reach out and ask for a call and just ask like really direct questions that are relative to his situation. I think that that's what you've got to do. You know, don't be afraid to also say, who can you introduce me to that can help me with Facebook ads? You know, because you don't want generalists. You don't want people that have done a little bit of everything. You want to find the best people in that subject and just link onto them and learn from them. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Yeah, that definitely answers, man. Like I think Paul mentioned that until certain point, right? Like in and I was like, Jesus, like until some point in your business, you didn't even know like how to run like Facebook ads, like that you just found like very good people who just like taking care of that for you.
Yeah, I did learn Facebook ads. I learned the whole situation. I learned like product, ops, media buying, and I kind of learned everything, like build a website as most dropshippers and stuff do. I wasn't dropshipping, but yeah, I think that was kind of a really important pathway for me because now I have like a base level understanding of it all. So I highly recommend that. So, but yeah, and then I realized that, you know, I was doing everything and it just wasn't optimal. And then, you know, make your first hire and that was a media buyer. And that's when our business really took off. They're amazing.
Cool. So in terms of the, like your family, right? Because I think family makes such a big difference in terms of kind of like what entrepreneurs are capable of and like, you know, the beliefs that they have and stuff. So your family, as I know, like entrepreneurs, right? Your family have like some furniture business or something like that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It was really kind of, it was like a small furniture business my grandpa started when he first kind of moved to Adelaide. And yeah, so it was always kind of like that entrepreneurial state was always there. I always used to go to like the shop and kind of, you know, watch them try to sell furniture and stuff like that, which was really awesome. Yeah, so it's always kind of been in my blood. Since then, you know, I launched a furniture business online with my parents. So that one's all closed, and it's a really good thing to be able to, you know, kind of watch that cycle and now work alongside my parents. It's cool.
That's awesome, man. So you have any like brothers, sisters?
I've got a older brother who was actually my first hire in the business. So he was helping me pack orders back in the early days and help with customer service.
So he's still working with the company or not anymore?
Yeah. So he's in Austria at the moment. He moved over there, but still works for the business, which is cool.
That's awesome, man. So, all right. So in terms of the, let's go more like tactical, right? Like people want to learn like tactics and stuff. So what's working for you like this Q4? Like, you know, after like iOS update, like what's working, for example, on the Facebook side? Any like specific tactics you could share?
Definitely. Look, I'll first and foremost say that it's really, really tough. Where, you know, we're using standard, you know, tactics that other people are using with like offline conversions and Zapier and those kind of things. UTM, honestly, it's not game changing for us because things are just so complex and there's so much going on. You know, it's very different from like a really lean drop shipping operation where the founder is looking at the ad sets every single day versus, you know, probably like Woody where lots of people are pushing in content and stuff like that. So we're a little bit more of a complex business. So I just wanted to frame that. But we're using basically just our MER, so our full funnel ROAS, looking at how things are adapting over time, keeping it under those parameters. But we're also not being too reactive on our MER. So what I mean by that is if our MER comes, it goes up, so, you know, our ad efficiency isn't there, and we're worried we're kind of not hitting profitability days. We found that one of the worst things we can do is just tell our media buyers to just scale right back. Because then what will happen is, you know, Facebook can almost bounce back up itself. So yeah, trying to average out more over like a 3-day period rather than a 1-day period as well for optimization's sake. We pulled right back on Pinterest, Snapchat, on those alternative channels. We're seeing a little bit of success with TikTok, probably struggling with scaling it right up, but we're quite bullish on TikTok and that can be a viable alternative. You know, I'm trying to think about some other things that we're doing. We're pushing spend really hard. We always kind of load up our spend and, you know, either like change our MER targets so that we can get a ton of traffic through the pixel, a ton of awareness, a bit more prospecting, and then we try to convert that traffic over the next couple of months.
So with those you said over the next couple of months, so you've tracked kind of like your like cycle of like purchasing, so that can be as long as several months?
Yeah, so we have to forecast, you know, four to 8 months out with our lead times and stuff like that. So we kind of know what we can expect. We, in your forecasting, you need to include your promotional periods. If you don't have historic sales, then that always gets a little bit difficult. I like to, you know, really get bullish on November every single year. You know, I think Black Friday is becoming more of a thing. So, you know, just every year, just, you know, think about what you can achieve and then just add a little bit extra, because yeah, the stock does carry through quite well, providing you have the cash flow, especially with Chinese New Year coming up and all these supply chain constraints.
With the volume like you do, right? That's, I'm very curious, like with the suppliers, you probably have like a lot of leverage with suppliers, right? Because you're putting such tremendous orders. Like, do you get like terms where you get like, where you pay them like 30 days, like after, like, or 60 days after, like how it's working with those, like with bigger volumes? Hey guys, people have been asking me how we scale to multiple six figures or even seven figures per month without getting shut down on Facebook. And we have a very sophisticated solution for this that I want to share with you, but it's just like too valuable to give away for free. So if you guys want this solution, just book a call with one of my team members and we'll show you exactly what it is and how it works, and we'll see if that's a good fit for you and for your business. So just book a call with my team member. We'll share it with you so you can scale your business to multiple six figures or even seven figures per month without getting shut down on Facebook, without having inconsistency and with high profitability. So just book a call with my team and I'll see you there.
Yeah, we do. We most definitely do. I think depending on the factory, you might be able to convince your factory to give you terms. And to do that, you know, just the process of going to a bunch of factories, getting a product approved, getting their prices, and then just pegging them off against each other and say, this person's going to give me terms. Terms are so important. Looking at that cash flow conversion cycle is super important. You know, there's a great tweet out there where they break down Gymshark's cash flow conversion cycle. And it's like, they've just got so much cash in the bank because basically the supplier is purchased, the customer's purchasing the product way before they even have to pay their supplier. So that's how they've grown so quickly. And we've got something pretty similar set up at this point. And yeah, it works really well. So these are the things, depending on how big you're getting, you know, getting a really solid either supply chain manager or operations manager in place that can handle all of this stuff. You know, I'm guessing most of your listeners are marketers at heart. So it's kind of contradictory to what we want to be doing. So I always say, you know, splurge a little bit on a really experienced ops manager.
I was like in terms of the Facebook, they also get like, for example, the credit lines, like invoicing system. So you also don't have to pay upfront and like, let's say like 60 days in, like 30 days and then 30 days to pay.
Yeah. Yeah. We currently don't use that. We probably could set that up. I'll look into that.
I had a conversation with guys, Shaper Mint. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, they're base. They're amazing.
Yeah, so like 3 years, I mean, they've scaled pretty nicely, you know, $250 million in sales, like 20% of the shaperware market. And they told me like they have a credit line from Facebook's like, I guess like $10 million or something. Like, so they can spend $10 million like this month, let's say, and then have another 30 days to pay for it, which, you know, on a scale helps a lot, you know, with the cash flow. So that would partially has allowed them to scale quite rapidly.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, 250 million sales is solid, especially when they were kind of scaling. I think that they were doing some amazing stuff on Pinterest as well, I heard.
Yeah. How do you track, like, so all of these channels, I mean, and you spending, you know, millions of dollars per month, how do you track, like, your, like, attribution? Are you using any, like, external tools or, like, Google Analytics or... Because I mean, on that volumes, like, or you just like measure like blended ROAS and then.
It's a crazy question. And every time you ask someone, it's kind of like, you kind of get an answer, but you don't really get an answer. And I'm probably going to give you one of those. So we use Rockerbox. I've heard good things about Hiro's and some other tools out there. So we look at a series of things, and there's a good tweet. Maybe I'll provide it to you after that really summarizes this way better than I could. But yeah, first and foremost, we look at our MER targets, our full funnel. Then we've got on our dashboard, we make sure that, you know, our daily dashboard that we're checking, we make sure we can kind of see every single channel layered on top of each other in terms of spend. So we can see, oh, why is this scaling? Why is this scaling? We also do post-purchase attribution surveys, which is really, really important. Like, where did you see us? That feeds into Rockerbox and it gives us a kind of a full picture. They try to remove the double attribution. That's the best that we've got at the moment. You know, I've heard you can do some pretty good stuff with Google Analytics as well, got diving really deep into that. We've got data analysts on this to really look at that side of things as well. But I would probably, you know, I guess this is like a business decision that you need to make when you're early on. And it's something that I wish we didn't do as soon as we did, which is add extra channels. It's like Facebook and Google can get you so far. And I just generally believe that, you know, if you're focusing on all of these other channels as an extension, there's probably other things that you could be looking at, like improving your product, like improving your customer experience, your CRO, like how much time are you putting into like TikTok, Snapchat, or Pinterest ads that could be focused on optimizing your website and getting 20% conversion lift there. So, yeah.
That's such point, man. That's such a good point.
Yeah. And you know, it just creates complexity. It creates focus shift. And so, yeah, hold off on that as long as you can.
Wow. So, okay. So Facebook and Google, so you say like these two platforms, to what level are you saying like Facebook and Google can take you?
I think I was listening to a podcast of, I think he runs like Clash of the Titans and all of those like mobile games. It was kind of like one of the OGs of Facebook ads. And, you know, he's saying that the platforms can take you to 100 mil depending on your product, just those two platforms. So yeah, I kind of agree with that. But as marketers, we kind of jump for the next shiny thing, or, and we treat it as diversification. We're saying, okay, if I have TikTok, I'm diversified from Facebook. It's like the iOS updates were like the perfect example that they're all in the same, like if Facebook can't figure it out, everyone's going to be hurt. And, you know, if Facebook goes down for any reason, you know, there's no barriers to entry to suddenly get set up on TikTok. So I don't think diversification in that situation makes sense to a degree. You know, once you're doing over 100 million, go nuts, or, you know, 50 million, depending on your product.
How is like with your other brands, right? Like what's kind of like, proportion right now in terms of your like hoodie, let's say in terms of revenue versus like all other brands, like kind of like, is that like 80-20 or is that different?
Yeah, it would be. We just closed an acquisition, a relatively large acquisition. It's doing over 30 million a year. So it would be more around that 85 percent mark would be Udi. And I think, you know, every time that we put a lot of focus and energy in building our platform for the future. However, you know, the Udi, we just did so well in setting up like a really great product and a great customer experience, you know, didn't skimp anywhere, really worked hard on that side of things. And it just keeps growing because of that. You know, there's so much friends and family referral on that. So, you know, the Udi now is going into a clothing. We're doing sleepwear and loungewear, which, you know, we've already got some early stage data on that's looking really good. So, yeah, I don't know. I think for the next, you know, couple of years, it's probably Udi is going to be 80-20 the whole time, unless we go really heavy on the acquisition front.
So what do you experience like, so from like, let's say, is that the same principle? Like, would you say, let's say you have like one brand, right? Like, and just like scaling it like different directions, maybe adding like other product lines versus, let's say, developing other product lines, like other stores, kind of like developing the whole infrastructure for that. Like, do you feel about that the same, exactly the same way as you feel about the like traffic channels? Like,
yeah, I think hindsight's a beautiful thing. I think, you know, if I could look at, you know, where we've gone, it would have made a lot more sense to just focus on Udi. It could be, you know, a $500 million business. But the truth is there was a lot of, like, looking back at it, you know, there was a lot of data to suggest that what we're onto in the smaller brands, you know, being able to build, you know, 20 brands doing 20 to 50 million looks really, really possible. And I think, you know, from a first principles point of view, it's definitely achievable. However, like our team needed to be structured so differently to what the Udi needed and our actual brand, like that business that I just kind of proposed. So right now, like we're definitely in a point where we're like assessing that situation and, you know, kind of, you know, never letting the Udi suffer ever, you know, that is everyone's priority. But still exploring that depth of brands that we think we can automate. We can incorporate software into both the predictive product side and also the actual setup side and the marketing side. So, you know, it's two very different businesses, but we're still figuring that out, if that makes sense. And then we've got the acquisitions as well, you know, closing that first acquisition. We've also got some amazing results there. So, you know, this is where the finance side of things comes. Finance and the strategy side thing comes in play. You know, we need our finance team to break down the return on capital into all three of those areas, what we're looking at. And then, you know, our C-level staff need to say, okay, this is the strategy that we can kind of focus on and double down on, because, you know, we definitely need a master one. It's just not clear what that one is at this stage, to be completely honest.
Cool, man. So in terms of the like markets, right? So, I mean, what do you start with? Was Australian market first?
Yeah, Australian markets, and then UK, Canada, and then US as well.
What numbers did you do in Australian market alone?
Australian markets is about 60% of our revenue.
Even now, right?
Yeah. So we it's people underestimate the Australian market. Typical process is I don't think it's going to be 60% forever. You know, we're scaling up heavily in all the other regions as well. I think, yeah, people typically go the US and then the UK and then, you know, Canada with these brands. But the truth is, you know, the US is so tough to crack into. It makes sense, you know, once you do crack into it, it grows. But the advertising ecosystem over there is so complex and so tough. So, you know, and I can obviously speak to Australians, localized marketing is really important. So it's just a natural progression for us.
So you would say like that compared to Australian, I mean, maybe that's from your perspective, yeah, as a local, like, but you see US market as like extremely like competitive, like the most competitive market you ever seen, like from all the markets you've seen.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just, it's messy as well. The cost of business is relatively high as well, like compared to what we can achieve in Australia. Local US people might have a considerable advantage there. Yeah, we get the highest margins in like Australia and the UK.
So you're tracking kind of like your profit margins like per country?
Most definitely. That's one thing we haven't figured out, to be completely honest. Not the financial side of that. We can obviously do regional breakdowns, but you know, we haven't figured out how these how our brands work with localized marketing. You know, we don't know if we have department managers in those countries. You know, Woody could probably warrant a UK department, but you know, how necessary is that? And you know, we've discussed split testing localized marketers, their copywriting over there to see how marginal the improvements are, or you know, considered setting up, you know, a UK kind of office to grow that side of the business, because it is very hard, even from a product sense. You know, going into the clothing industry, how do we make sure that we're on trend globally? You know, a lot of other brands just don't even do that global business because of those challenges.
How your days are structured, man, like with in terms of the meetings and stuff like this, kind of like do you like block your calendar like back to back with like meetings, or do you give yourself like more space, kind of like blocking bigger kind of like spots for different tasks? Like how do you do that?
It's something that I'm still, you know, developing right now because of our lack of structure and no CMO within our business. I have a lot of direct reports. So kind of the best I can do for the business and for them, you know, they're all incredible operators. So there's no need to micromanage or dive in too much. But they, I just give them 30 to an hour. So my calendars are just booked out from you know, 5 a.m. to like 5 p.m. in meetings. If I need to get something urgently done, I just schedule a block of time to do that piece of work. You know, time blocking is a really efficient way of getting things done and focusing.
Cool, man. Yeah, thank you so much for making the time, you know, in your busy schedule, man. In terms of the like, so you have, I mean, so now you have like, you know, extra like responsibilities as kind of like as a marketing leader. It's like, I mean, all of the other things in your business as well. So how do you deal with all of the pressure, right? Like, so as an entrepreneur, like you get like shitload of pressure, you know? So how do you deal with it? How do you unwind? Like, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm like this, you know, I'm almost like shaking, you know, I'm sure you can understand. So how do you unwind? Like what helps you too?
I think you've got to get like a little strange, like a toolbox that you can kind of call upon, you know, walking, meditating, all of those things can, you know, become part of that toolbox. I think you need support around you. You know, if you've got like all of these things that are like a certain, because there's certain activities that make you shake, right? It's not just the general everything. It's the certain thoughts. It's like this part of my life creates this pressure. So, you know, how do you then use your support system to remove that? You know, maybe it's financial pressure. Maybe, you know, maybe maybe uncertainty causes you that pressure. So not understanding your finances and the sales trajectory and whether the inventory matches that and all of that kind of stuff. So that's a communication thing. Like that's getting clarity on this, trusting your people and stuff like that. So, you know, framing what you're feeling, write stuff down. Once you write things down, you interact with things differently. You know, sometimes you can probably look at it from like a more trivial point of view. It's like, this is irrational as well. Mm-hmm. It's all of those kind of things. You know, I love just hanging out with friends on the weekend and just switching off on a Sunday, watching movies. I think that's probably my go-to, aside from meditating and training.
Cool. So are your friends like kind of like also running businesses, or are they just like, the same friends you've had, like, let's say 10 years ago?
Same friends 10 years ago.
Oh, wow, man. That's awesome. That's awesome.
But I'm in Adelaide, which is it's down south in Australia, and it's not a huge entrepreneurial community compared to maybe Melbourne that have a lot more there's a lot more kind of businesses going on. But, you know, I lived in Melbourne for a year and missed my friends, missed my family way too much. So I just came back to Adelaide, and it's good that not everyone's doing the same thing. I like it.
I want to connect mastermind and network with 6, 7, 8-figure entrepreneurs. Join our free community on Facebook, which is called Brand Hypergrowth. It's for only entrepreneurs who are already doing at least $30,000 or more in sales per month and want to go to 7, 8 figures. So you can connect, you can network, you can mastermind, you can exchange insights and value with these guys and take your business to the next level. So there should be a link in the description. Make sure you join today.
What are the, like, I've read somewhere in the article you're planning to take the company public at some point?
Yeah, we're looking at kind of any capital raising event, whether an IPO makes sense, I'm not sure. Probably can't say that we're, you know, 100% going to do that. So we're kind of looking at any forms of capital raise at this point.
So, like, for example, the Australian companies, is there like a big kind of like private equity market like in Australia? Like for, you know, like, yeah. Or it's more like US, everything is based in US.
Yeah, the appetite in the US is far greater. I strongly recommend, you know, anyone that has a sizable business that are looking for money, I would look at the US. The valuations are better. The understanding of the business is better as well. So we're looking at both at this stage.
Would you relocate to United States? Let's say you want to, like, you know, you want to take company to even like higher, you know, level, yeah. Like would you relocate?
Yeah, it's something I've been thinking of a little bit at the moment, just because the talent, the e-commerce talent you've got over there is just so strong. You know, we can either keep trying to build up, the community here, or we could look and fill a lot of our roles quite quickly going to somewhere like Miami or something like that. So I have been thinking about it, but again, it's probably more a personal decision right now to stay here.
Do you do like actively like any sports, like kind of like on a serious level, like running, like CrossFit, like Ironman, like anything that just like kind of like pushes your body to the limit?
Yeah, I used to play footy. It was like Australian rules footy. You probably wouldn't know it, but then I, you know, got into fitness a lot, you know, a lot of weightlifting and stuff like that. And then now I probably just do it as a bit of a, you know, I try not to take it seriously. I think people put too much pressure on, you know, if you're starting to worry about getting attached to like a body image or something like that, that's just one more thing that we just got to deal with. You know, as long as you're healthy and happy, that's kind of the main thing. So that's how I treat at the moment. So, but yeah, I have to train every day. Otherwise I'll just get real, you know, you need to do it to focus and whatnot and to relax a little bit.
Do you do that like in the morning or like end of the day?
Bit of mix at the moment. So I'll either walk for like an hour, and then I'll also train for an hour. So one of those will be in the morning, one of those will be in the afternoon, depending on how it falls.
Cool. So your assistant was very helpful, like setting up this call. So like, and I mean, like in terms of kind of like productivity, right? Like what are the major things like you've noticed? Like maybe you have like specific examples of the things that you kind of like just like don't even think about, right? And you just let, you know, for example, your assistant deal with it. Kind of like, how do you free your mind so you can make higher level decisions, right? Like, can you give me some, you know?
Yeah, I think if you're a solo founder right now and you're the only person, there's an argument that, and you know, you're the most important person, you care the most about the business and you have the capabilities to run the whole business, which a lot of single founders do. There's an argument that your very first hire should be a personal assistant, that someone that, you know, does everything for you to free up your time. So there you can work your full day. Administrative work, access to platforms, you know, onboarding things, writing notes for certain tasks that you need to do, getting a bit of research. There's everything from, you know, answering the door so you don't need to get up when you're in flow state. So I think that those, you know, these may seem trivial, but they add up like beyond that you could believe, because you don't really realize how much time that stuff actually takes until you get someone to support you in those areas. So yeah, I think that's the most important step. But then, you know, there's plenty of workflows that people you can set up with assistants and just general, you know, direct reports to really free your mind to work on strategy. You know, it comes down to the the lifespan of the business as well. You know, are you needed to be executing right now, or are you needing to be delivering strategy, support, getting on calls with people, bringing people into the company? You need to understand those differences as well. I think that that's important.
So what's next for you? Kind of like, you have like, do you even like measure kind of like, okay, so now we go for a Billy, or like do you kind of like think in those categories, or like do you think like in categories like we have to like help, you know, like to like change like lives, let's say 3 million more like customers, like what are the next benchmarks for you?
Yeah, I think $1 billion in sales is definitely a goal for us. I think it will really prove to everyone the business model that we have created. So that's kind of why it's, you know, we've got something to prove. We want to show that, you know, with the UDI is replicatable, the business is, you know, we can change the game for Australian e-commerce as well. So I think that's definitely a soft goal. Right now we're looking at how do we improve the elements of all our business right now and how all of our team work together. Cause we've, you know, a year ago we barely had any employees. Now we've got 75. So it's like, you know, we're kind of looking at it more so from your workflow processes, reporting, all of those kind of things. So we have objective OKRs. So we set up our objectives and key results. You know, a lot of our OKRs are structured around that efficiency. So less than, you know, let's increase sales by 20%. You know, that's coming automatically through those processes that we're improving and whatnot. Plenty of new initiatives that we're launching, of course, but you know, it is really just about getting a bit of structure with all the new people we've got at this stage.
Cool, my man. Yeah, I'll see you at that B level. Like, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, how old are you? Like 20, 26, 27?
26, yeah.
Man, like that's so impressive, you know? That's so impressive. I mean, like internet gave like this, like, the, you know, pretty much the opportunity, you know, if you think about it, like 100 years, I mean, 20 years ago, I mean, you'd have to do like, I don't know what, like to, you know, to grow the companies this fast to this level.
It's crazy. There's no Alibaba, no direct sourcing from China. Everyone was, you know, fighting for shelf space. All the big Procter & Gamble's just owned everything. You know, the barriers to entry were huge. We live in the most opportunistic time to launch a business. You know, we're very blessed in that sense. Some people that don't have internet don't have that opportunity, which, you know, we should feel very grateful for. I think that, you know, don't stand on the sideline. You know, anyone that's watching this that hasn't at least gotten started needs to get started.
And you help so many people, you know, I'm watching your videos and I see the comedy people like, hey, you know, it's like you're inspiring people like to do amazing things, man. So, I mean, you definitely, you know what I mean? Like, now probably they're like millionaires created by from what they have seen, you know, from your channel. So the things that, you know, like indirectly impacting those people. So yeah, man, that's amazing job you've done on that front, you know, on top of everything you've done in business. So
likewise.
Cool, man. I know you're busy. Yeah, thank you. So I know you're a busy man. So thank you so much for this call. And we'll drop your like channel. I think most people already subscribe to your channel anyway, but you know, like your channel, your Instagram, like people can get in touch with you. Like, are you interested, like, so if anyone, you said like you're acquiring business, you're looking to acquire more businesses, or because maybe someone has a business, they want to like talk to you, like anything like that. So should it also get in touch with you?
Yeah, 100%. The email's in my channel. So just reach out there, send us what you've got. At the very least, you know, see if I can help out if it's not something that we're interested in. But yeah, likewise, man, like you're doing so much for the community. You've got some great groups going on, and everyone thanks you for bringing everyone together and, you know, incubating so many ideas. I think this community was only going to get better by you know, everyone lifting each other up. So appreciate you as well, man.
Thank you, my man. Thank you. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Debbie, thank you so much for making time for this. And yeah, man, I mean, keep up the amazing work that you do. And yeah, we'll see you. Maybe if you're in Miami, man, like we connect in person.
Yeah, let's go January or February. I should be able to get out of the country and we'll link up.
Let's do it, man. All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Debbie. Bye. Have a good one.
Hey, thank you for listening to my podcast. Now, if you're looking for help scaling your e-commerce business or advertising campaigns on Facebook and other platforms, then I want to invite you for a free strategy session. We help entrepreneurs scale from 6 figures to 7 figures and even to 8 figures with their e-commerce businesses. So if that's what you're looking for, then I want to invite you. There should be a link somewhere here so you can apply for a free strategy call, and we'll see how we can help you out.